And with that, everybody, please welcome Bob. Bob, come on in and share with us.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bob. I'm in recovery. And it's wonderful to be here today. And I'm here on time. That's a good thing. I have a tendency to miss appointments. I have numerous doctor appointments that come and go. And I have an issue with my right shoulder. And I missed the appointment yesterday because the stock market was crashing and I couldn't take myself away from the computer, you know. But anyways, today's it's a nice day. It's sunny outside and it's warm and the grass is starting to grow. And I like spring, you know. Spring is new beginnings. And last year at this time, I was in a treatment facility in North Carolina for a 45-day stay. So anyways, let's back it up. So I'm kind of an old guy. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but you'll probably figure out within a couple of years as I go on. But I was brought up just before the Beatles got I was born before the Beatles became a rock group. And I remember when I Want to Hold Your Hand came out. And that was big stuff back then. Everybody had to have that 45. Nobody knows what a 45 is. Maybe some people do here. But my early childhood wasn't all that great. I had a couple of parents that were like oil and vinegar. I have no idea why they got together. My mom had dated my father's brother. And then somehow my dad got in the picture and she ended up marrying my dad instead of my uncle, you know. And my uncle went on to become a vice president of a huge worldwide insurance company, made a ton of money. And he had a big family. He had 11 children, 9 children. It was a family of 11, 9 children. I had 2 sisters in my family, and my parents fought a lot, and they most frequently fought on a Sunday, and it was usually around being late for church. I wasn't late for church. I was ready. My sisters were ready. You know, it was my mom that was always late. So I don't know. It was crazy. It just seemed that every Sun I we, all of us began to dread Sundays. And Sunday was a day of going to church. I was brought up Catholic, and back then I really tried to believe in the whole thing. And even in my adulthood, when I first started going through treatment and so forth, I tried really, really hard. But you know something, this past year, I just decided that I give up, that none of it makes sense to me. I've found it very uncomfortable to sit in meetings where people would say things like, God does what I can't, and just generally wouldn't take credit for work that we've done. And I think many of us have low self-esteems when we come in here. And I think it's important to take credit for your failures as well as your successes. You know, it's kind of all up to me where it goes. I just don't believe that if I send a thought into the universe that suddenly everything's going to be done for me. I have to do the work. And the way I see higher power exists, especially when two people get together and talk recovery, you know, and all it takes is two people to make a meeting. And that's for me where the magic happens. The magic happens in the meetings because most of the time when I go to a meeting, no matter what condition I am emotionally when I walk in, I generally walk out feeling better. That's just something that happens to me when I associate with others like myself not only trying to get clean and stay clean, but to have and live a life that is reasonably, that I'm reasonably content with life. And not every day is, daisies and lollipops and stuff. We have lots of challenges that hit us in life. And we can't use substances to dull the pain, because it's all it takes is returning to one drug, and you're probably gonna stay out there if you do that. I go back in time. I think I started using when I would take a sip of a drink that my parents had left behind after a party. And they didn't have many parties, but I discovered alcohol that way. And then when I was at some of my in-laws' or family members' houses, I would steal it. And I remember when I was about 9 years old, myself and my cousin used to steal it from my uncle. We'd go into the refrigerator and steal beers and go outside and drink and get drunk. And that continued right through high school. I was a fall down drunk by the time I was 16 years old. And once I got my license, then I could, leave my house and go out and consume and be reasonably okay by the time I got home, if you will. I went to college. I did graduate from college and got a degree. And it was a degree in psychology. But I don't know how I got out, because it was just nonstop using substances in college, everything, everything, and in every way fashionable that you could imagine. So a friend of mine, just after I had graduated, confronted me one day and said he had seen me driving down Route 95, and that not only was I speeding on the highway, but I was moving between lanes without blinkers, and they could tell that I wasn't in my right mind. And he said, "You're going to kill yourself, or even worse, you'll kill somebody else, and you really need to go into treatment for this." And he spent an afternoon, and he convinced me. And I went home and I told my mom, and within 2 days, I was in a treatment facility, my first one. That was way back in the late 1970s, and that began my journey. I didn't have a journey in recovery, though. I wasn't ready. I just didn't want to stop using. Maybe some of my, maybe half of me did and half of me didn't. And it just was relapse after relapse after relapse. And my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting took place in the mid-1980s. That's when I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I met somebody who had a good message, a strong message I was still using, but I went to meetings anyway. And he had gone through a therapeutic community, had gotten tossed out. He didn't graduate, but he spoke very highly of it. And I thought, that's what I need. But it took me another year or two before I approached that facility. And they made me call him every day for like 30 days. And then eventually they said, "Okay, you've got a bed and you can come in right now today." So I went in that therapeutic community and spent 2 years there. And while I was in there, I learned a lot about myself. I cried nearly every day in groups. And there was a lot of stuff I needed to work on, especially my low self-esteem, my feeling of being different than, and not feeling a part of anywhere, finding it very difficult to make friends unless drugs was, on the table, if you will. And, so I began to learn some life skills, and I built a support system. I went to meetings and ended up graduating after 2 years. And then I met my wife. We got married. We traveled the world many, many times. And we've been married now for like 30 years. And, but addiction has been a problem my whole life. So after that treatment program, I did put together 10 years of clean time. And then I had to have surgeries for a 3 year period of time. I had precancerous tumor taken out of my sinus, and I had to have a few sinus surgeries. Did a lot of nerve damage. I was in constant pain 24/7. I was introduced to pain clinic and all that stuff. And then eventually my wife said she wasn't going to stay with me. And that was on a Christmas Eve in 19, I don't know, 1990 something. Anyway, 1998 maybe. And she said, it's either, your drugs or I'm not going to be part of this anymore. So I went into treatment that night and spent about 2 weeks. And then we went to St. Bart's with my parents. And, I got back on the saddle and I was able to put together 22 years clean. Went to meetings a lot. I did H&I, I was involved in H&I meetings and service work. And then I found out that I had cancer, and the procedure to biopsy it did nerve damage again, and that was not a good experience. I had to wait 6 months for surgery. Had the surgery, and then the pain was probably three or four or five times as worse after I got out of surgery. So I ended up on pain clinic again, and then eventually reached a point where I was like, I don't need this stuff anymore. I need to go into treatment. So that was a year ago. So right now I have a year clean. My last year has been my best. And I think part of the reason for that is something I heard somebody say yesterday. They were talking about when we put together big chunks of clean time. When we relapse, it doesn't necessarily mean that we lost everything that we learned. And so when we do make a decision to get back into recovery, we're not starting it at ground zero. We already have a lot of information and self-knowledge, and we can usually get back on the beam pretty quickly. But I'll tell you this, last year when I was in treatment, it took about 4 full weeks before I had the slightest inclination of wanting to be clean. And that 4 weeks in treatment, I was disturbed a lot by it. And I shared it with my counselor. I shared it in groups. I said, I don't really feel like getting clean. And this has never happened before. Usually in the past, when I'd gone into treatment, I didn't want to use it. I'd had enough. And this time it really scared the crap out of me. I was afraid I was going to leave treatment and pick up immediately when I got home. And that was not the case. After about 4 weeks, I began to feel that little spark that I think maybe some of you may have experienced in Narcotics Anonymous, that feeling, that desire of wanting to stay clean and wanting to help others and all of that. And that's probably the biggest key to staying clean is service work. At least I think so. And I do a lot of it. I spoke on Monday night. I'm speaking here now. I'm speaking again on Saturday morning at a treatment facility locally, so it's kind of been a busy week for me. But doing this, I don't know, I get like this natural high from it. I can't explain it. When I share my story, and I don't know how good I'm doing or how bad, I've trying to talk about 40 years of my life in just a few minutes isn't necessarily easy, but yeah, service work, this is where it's at, So if you haven't experienced going into facilities on hospitals and institutions commitments, I definitely recommend doing so, because number one, you meet some nice people, and number two, it's good to give back. And and then as far as the higher power thing, I talked a little bit about it. For me, higher power is the principles of the program. So, for example, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We all have heard those, but they're all really, really important spiritual principles. And when I'm living my life with those in mind, I live a much better quality life than when I'm not. So I see that, a power greater than myself is that, the principles of the program and all of the experience that was distilled into all the literature that is available now in Narcotics Anonymous. Back in the 1980s, there wasn't. I think there was, if anything, there might have been a white pamphlet back then, but there wasn't anything. Alcoholics Anonymous had all that. But nowadays, Narcotics Anonymous, especially secular Narcotics Anonymous, has grown. I counted 1,000, not NA meetings, but set 1,000 secular meetings a week take place on Zoom around the world. And that's a lot. So, here in the Bible Belt, people are really funny. Like, they know where I'm at and they'll walk up to me and they'll say, "Oh, I really love you," or they'll give me a pat on the back. But these are God folks, so they kind of like, I kind of wonder what's behind that, like maybe they're thinking, well, give him some time and he'll figure out the God thing. But for me, I just am not into the religious thing, and I'm really thankful that secular NA exists. It's home for me. I've been to a lot of meetings in the past couple of months, and 3 weeks ago, I started a meeting. So the first week, I sat alone the whole hour. Nobody showed up. My friend who I had started a meeting with wasn't able. He wasn't in town. He got called out of town, so it was just me. The second week, my friend showed up, so it was the two of us. And then this past week, my friend couldn't be there, and four people came I'd never seen before in my life. And I asked them, I said, "So how'd you hear of it?" And a couple people pointed to this other person. Another person pointed to this other person. That person had been told by his therapist locally. So, like, I have a therapist. I go once a month. Why do I do that? Because I have someone consistent in my life that knows everything, that's a professional, that can set my thinking straight when it needs to be. And so I told him, we had talked about my having difficulty in meetings with all the God talk here in the Bible Belt, and he suggested I start a meeting. And so it was him that planted the seed. And so anyways, the meeting's been started, and all I have to do now is get to the next area meeting and have it accepted into area, the group, and then we'll be in the meeting lists. But I'm really excited about this group on Sundays. It's 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. on Hilton Head Island at Yana Club. If anybody vacations to Hilton Head, there's a clubhouse that houses all kinds of groups: Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Secular Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, Adult Children of Alcoholics, all that stuff. So it's a real spiritual place. It has a vibe. You literally can feel the vibe when you walk in the building. It's just a lot of positivity, and you can tell a lot of healing has taken. I can tell a lot of healing has taken place. So, anyways, people that come vacation to Hilton Head, many times are showing up at meetings in the summer. So I hope our little group will expand with some vacationers. And I think that's probably all the time I have. And I'm really appreciative of everybody listening. Thanks very much.